This is Equestrian Legacy Radio.
Gotta go feed the horses, gotta give them hay. Gotta go feed the horses because it's a brand new day. Gotta go feed the horses, gotta feed them now. Gotta go feed the horses because horses need the chow. No time for coffee, can't take time for me. Gotta take care of the animals, so many mouths to feed. Gotta go feed, got to go feed. Chicken. Gotta gather eggs, gotta go give them crack corn so they don't refuse to lay. Gotta go to the hen house before the morning's through. I can hear that rooster singing cock-a-doodle-doo. Procrastination, get out of that bed. Each and every morning, everybody must be fed. Gotta go feed, got to go feed.
Listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, and I'm your host, Gary Holt. We have a fun show today. We have joining us the Gentleman Outlaw, singer-songwriter Royal Wade Kimes, and author and blogger Dutch Henry. And when we come back, we'll be talking with Royal Wade Kimes.
Got an old horse heading down the road. Got no cares, got no load. He's a lonesome cowboy. In the next town, there's a girl. Makes him feel like he owns the world. He's a lonesome cowboy. He ain't got a dollar to his name. He's the kind that you're never gonna tame. He's a lonesome cowboy. He was born to ride the range. Thank you.
barbed wire fence in his way wasn't there just yesterday. He's a lonesome cowboy. He's been called a saddle bum. He's just free. He owes no one. He's a lonesome cowboy. He ain't got a dollar to his name. He's a kind that you're never gonna tame. He's a lonesome cowboy. He was born to ride the range.
Lonesome Cowboy, and that's by Royal Wade Kimes. Royal Wade has just been nominated for the Will Rogers Award by the Academy of Western Artists for Outstanding Male Performer in Western Music. And Royal Wade, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing good. I'm having a good time. I'm just sitting here in the studio here at the ranch and kick back and gonna have a good time with you.
Well, we're looking forward to it. You know, you were a lot of fun to talk with a few weeks ago as we were scheduling you for the show. And our guests are always very interesting as far as their backgrounds. Our audience loves to hear a little bit about the folks that are on the show. And you actually were a cowboy for a while. Tell us a little bit about your early days.
Yeah, I was. Well, I'm the last generation to ride the Arkansas-Oklahoma border country, which is mountainous country, and borders with the Cherokee Nation. And my job was to keep them cattle on the Arkansas side. I imagine it's probably 500,000, 750,000 acres all total and big range. And had a couple good brush horses and a collie dog would run with me. And that was my job, and I'd done it for a long time. And then I rodeoed and roped and tried to ride bulls time or two, Gary, but I think they rode me more than I did them. So that didn't work out so well. And then when the government came in and closed down all of the range, and I picked up my guitar and headed to Nashville.
Well, but, did you start out, you know, what age were you when you started out working cattle and working out on the range?
I started riding when I was about 11, you know, riding quite a bit. And then when I was 15, I started working the borderline, and I rode that for years. And it was pretty tough stuff. I mean, I'd ride my horse out on the end of one of them big, long, mountainous points, and I'd get off and just drop a reins on him and walk out there a ways. And a lot of people wouldn't know what this is, but you can call a cow up, and there's a way you do it. My grandpa taught me how you did it. And so I'd walk out there and get away from that squeaking saddle because that horse would be breathing, you know, pretty hard. And where I could hear, and I could hear that. If I could hear a lead cow bell out there about 15, 20 miles in them canyons, I would call to it, and you'd hear that cow bell just ding every now and then because she's grazing. And then lead bell cows, the rest of the herd followed them. And I'd call and direct that bell would stop, and I'd call again a couple more times, and you'd hear it going ding, 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 here she come. And she'd bring that whole herd in, and it would be the next afternoon when they'd get there.
Wow. Wow.
Yep.
Wow. Well, now, you know I've got to ask you, what kind of cow call was that you did?
Well, it's a long, lonesome call. There's nothing we're going to do on here. I'd blow those speakers out. But It's a long, lonesome call. When that thing echoes down the canyon, it was beautiful. And on the last trail ride we just did out in Arkansas, I had my band out there. They come out on top of the mountain there, where one of the places where I used to do that. And I said, I just had them all stand there. I said, "Now you listen to this." And I called, and we actually heard cattle bawl way over there towards the Oklahoma line.
Oh, goodness. Goodness. Yeah. That was a treat. That was a treat for them, I guess. Well,
yeah, especially a couple of them. They didn't know nothing about that, you know.
Oh, goodness. Well, with your music, at what age were you when you got interested in music and started picking and singing some?
Well, when I was interested, I had a cousin that came in. He done a lot of running around, and he, you know, played music in Vegas and everywhere else. And I was like 4 years old, and he sat down on two old concrete blocks under a yellow bulb that served as a porch light, and the porch was those two concrete blocks. And he sat down on them concrete blocks and played that guitar, and I sat out there in the yard in front of him and listened to him until they called me to bed. And I knew then what I wanted to do. And so when I got big enough to earn my own money and buy me a guitar, I bought myself a little old Stella, and I taught myself to play. And so when I was about 18, I wrote my first song, and I knew then that, you know, if I'm going to do this, I'm not just going to do it just to play. I'm going to go do it for the real deal, you know. And so I just kept writing songs and thought I knew what I was doing. I got to Nashville. I mean, I'd been writing songs for 10 years before I went on to Nashville, you know. And when I got there, I thought I knew I was a songwriter, and I found out real quick I wasn't a songwriter. I was there to learn to be one, and I mean, really, you think you know how to write a song, but till you sit down and wrote with the boys, the pros, you really don't know. You're not doing it right, and you make mistakes, you know, like you write too much song, or you write two subjects in a song, and just silly mistakes that you don't know you're doing and don't realize. But so after a little bit, I honed my craft, and one thing I did have when I got to Nashville, Garth Brooks' manager, wasn't a manager at the time, but he was working at ASCAP Royalty Farm, and he said, "One thing you got that 90% of people don't have when you come to town is you've got the hooks," and he said, "That's half the song."
Wow. Wow. Yeah, you got to hook people in on there. Now, when we talked the other day, and this was real interesting to me, you kind of had a mentor while you were in town, and that fellow owned a big piece of Brentwood, Tennessee. Who was that?
He didn't own a big piece. He owned it. Mr. Eddie Arnold, a Tennessee plowboy. He told me, "I'd have a number one song," said, "my first number one song," said, "I went to Sally," and he said, Miss Sally, "we've had a number one hit, and I think we should take this money and buy some land with it." And he said, "because we might not ever have another one." And so he bought a big section of Brentwood, and he had another hit, and he went to her, and he told her that over and over and over until they owned the whole freaking south end of Nashville. And after, and all them old boys on the Grand Ole Opry said, "you know, thought he's crazy because he's buying up all them woods down there, you know." And then when Brentwood sprung up and they wanted to buy land, guess who they had to buy it from?
Yeah. Well, I told you it was real interesting. He and I frequented the same restaurant in Brentwood for quite a while.
Mm-hmm,
and one evening I was in having dinner, and he and his wife were in, and just a sweet people. And
they were.
Yeah, this was like a little meat-and-free restaurant. Yeah.
Yeah, he was something. I used to go, we went to lunch all the time like that. I've probably even seen you there and you didn't know it, but I mean, I worked with him for 20 years. Without him, Rollway Times would have never happened. But I mean, I met him right out on the street there in Brentwood, just one-on-one, you know, and we stand there talking, and I'll never forget. I thought, boy, if I'm ever going to do it, I better do it now. I'd already been there 2 years, and nothing was happening, you know. And I just said to him, I said, "Mr. Arnold," I said, "I sure would like to talk to you, you know, sometime, just me and you." And I said, "I don't want anything." I said, "I know everybody wants something. I don't. I just need you to tell me something." And he said, he told me, he said, well, after Christmas, said, you come down to my office. He gave me his number and all that. So I came down there, and because he liked me. I don't know if it was a cowboy hat or what it was, but he liked me. And, he's such a gentleman. So, you know, I said, Mr. Arnold, I said, I don't want anything from you. I just need you to tell me if I've got it. I said, because I go to these riders' nights, and I see these guys, and I see them pat them on the shoulder and tell them they've got it. And I said, if they do, I don't, because it sounds terrible to me. I said, so I can't really believe anybody, and if I can't believe you, who can I believe? And So he listened to this little raggedy tape I had there, and he said, who's that singing? And I said, well, it's me. And so he calls Jerry Typer, who is also a legend in the business. He was the publisher for A Cup Rose and worked with Wesley Rose and all those guys and the Hank Williams catalog and all that. So the two of them, they told me, he said, look, we're going to work on the dream and you work on reality. And so I got me a job, and I just started working it and writing, and wrote with Garth Brooks, and I wrote with Kent Blazy, wrote Tomorrow Never Comes, and started writing with some good writers, and Bob Dole hooked me up there. And I started honing my craft and getting my writing good. Once I felt like my writing was in place, then I started getting cuts, you know.
Right, right. Well, now, you had a big song with Garth Brooks, I think. And
17 million seller.
Yeah, what was that?
We Bury the Hatchet. You know, it's that song about all the neighbors' lights came on last night. It's like I do every time. So, and I just see it, the little town I'm from, population 99, you know, every time we had a fight, all the lights kick off.
Oh, goodness.
So, we wrote it. It was a blast.
Oh, goodness. Well, you had a lot of success as a songwriter. At what point was it that you started to become a performer?
Well, it took 8 years to get my first cut as a writer. So that was the Garth Brooks cut. Then I had a Diamond Reel cut, gold record, and all that stuff. Started having cuts on all these artists. And so 6 years later, 14 years into it, I got a deal with Warner Brothers, and we cut Another Man's Sky album, which had a top 10. Another Man's Sky was a big record. Leave My Mom Out of This was a big record. And then the video was a top 10 that recurred it twice, Another Man's Sky. It was a big cowboy-type video. You see me on this big chocolate horse and got that blue heeler following me along there in the winter, you know, and it's really a good video. And so that's when I started. I got that cut. It took 14 years, but, you know, that's kind of like going to school. It takes a while. You just can't. You know, it's them boys that come to town and say, I'm going to give it 2 years or 3 years. Well, adios, amigo, because if you're not determined to hang in there and stay with it till the bitter end, you're 80% chance you ain't going to make it.
Right, right, right. Well, and you don't fit the mold today.
I didn't fit the mold then.
Yeah. So you do a lot of the cowboy music, a lot of the Western music. You know, that's the reason that you were just nominated for the Will Rogers Award by the Academy of Western Artists. What was it that led you to write so much of the cowboy or the Western type music?
Well, my goodness, Gary, there's a lot into that, but I'll tell you what, one of the main things that got it started, I cut the Another Man's Sky record, which was on Warner Brothers, and that was a honky-tonk record, and a big dance record. In fact, I was a top 10 dance record in the nation, and that was a big honor. Yeah, it's huge. But it's not my style of music. I wrote the stuff, and most of it on there I'd written, but I wrote what they were wanting, you know. And So I actually asked off of Warner Brothers so I could start writing who I was, and from my heart, I want to write. You know, I'm a cowboy, and I want to write from there, from that place. So, born and raised practically in a saddle, and I cannot never remember not wearing cowboy boots, and all my heroes were, you know, cowboys, Gary Cooper, John Wayne, all them guys, you know, and so I wanted to write about that, and I saw there was a void in it, but what really cranked it was when the industry came together, and there was over 200 of them sitting in this room, And they said, we're going to stop calling this country music, and we're going to start calling it contemporary country music.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't
mm-hmm.
going to have anything to do with country and western. And I'll never forget when I stood up in front of all of them and I said, well, there's a studio right down the street, and I'm going to go cut me a country and western record. I knew then I was done. I couldn't do that. And let me tell you what, it was a fight. I mean, it was a war once I'd done that because, you know, they weren't going to play the music. So the first record I cut, knowing that they wouldn't play that kind of music, I made it just as acoustic, cowboy, outlaw as I could make it. Because
mm-hmm.
I come from outlaws. My whole lineage is all outlaws. They ran with Bonnie and Clyde, Pretty Boy Floyd, and Mal Barker. And so my whole lineage was that. I knew about it. My riding in the mountains was with them old-timers and World War II veterans and all that. So I learned about their ancestry. So, man, I was molded for it. And why not? You know, I mean, this is who I am. So I struck out on it. And I cut that Hanging Around the Moon record. It was my first cowboy record when I left Warner Brothers, which done awesome for me. I won Album of the Year from the Academy of Western Artists with that record. And I put 5,000 of those suckers in my truck, and I headed out of interstate all the way to Laramie, Wyoming. And I was coming back, got halfway back, was in St. Louis, and I'd sold every one of them. And Disney called me, the vice president of Doug Howard over there. He called me and he said, man, I want to talk to you. I said, what about? He called me on my cell phone. He said, when you get here, so I want to have lunch with you. Turns out, he'd be having guys come into his record label while I was out on the road putting them records everywhere, and they'd seen them, never let old stop on her interstate. So I made it happen, but it was a lot of work. And I've had people say, how did you beat them? I mean, how did you do it? Because I had to beat them. I mean, to be honest, Gary, it was to put where you could really visualize it, it was like David going up against Goliath.
Right.
Because
right.
I knew the radio wasn't going to play me, the mainstream radio. So I cut records that I thought the people would dig, you know, they would like. And
mm-hmm.
it turned out to be a good thing. And but how you beat them is just work. I mean, I think a lot of people might make it in the business and maybe opportunity knocked. And when they opened the door, it was standing there in overalls and it looked like work and they passed.
Right,
and
right.
You can't do that, man. You gotta roll up your sleeves and get down in the gutter and go for it, you know.
Well, that's exactly right, and your music is great. We want to play one right now. We're going to take just a real quick break. It's called Mile High Honey, and we want to listen to that. And when we come back, let's talk some more about some things that you've done differently. We want to talk about a letter you got from James Arness, one of our heroes growing up, and we'll talk some more about what you're doing in the saddle. So let's listen to Mile High Honey by Royal Wade Kimes. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio.
When I rode in Cheyenne, I ain't no time hurry, but I do the best I can. There's a lady in Denver that says I'm her hero. I ride there tomorrow, it's my last rodeo. She's my mom. I never get enough. I'm always in the money when it comes to her love. She's that one in a million that takes your breath away. It looks like Colorado until my dying day. She's my mind. It's so long, boys, this is my last ride. I'm trading in in my burrow for a little blue-eyed bride. Well, I've been broke and busted, but I never lost my heart. I'm going out a winner, and right here's where it starts. She's my mile high honey, I'm never getting up. I'm always in the money when it comes to her love. She's that one in a million that takes your breath away. It looks like Colorado until my dying day. She's my mile high honey, she's my mile high honey.
Mile High Honey by Royal Wade Kimes, and we're talking with Royal Wade. And you know, earlier we were talking about a letter that you said you got from James Arness. Can you tell us about that one?
Yeah, it's a big surprise. True West Magazine got a hold of me and wanted to do a story on me because of me becoming the Outlaw Nashville. They started calling me the Outlaw Nashville, and the reason why they call me that is because I bucked their system. I wouldn't bend to their way of doing. I wouldn't cut contemporary country, and I just wouldn't bend. And so when I struck out on my own, and when the fight was on, and that's basically what it is, it's a big war, the word got around. I mean, it started getting around, hey, this guy's an outlaw. You know, he don't run with the crowd. And so I did the story with True West Magazine. Bob Bozbell got a hold of me, and we did it. And so in doing the story, they put me on the front cover, and I found out I'm the only recording artist to ever be on the front cover of True West Magazine. I think that magazine's 60 years old now.
Wow.
And so that was quite an honor. And James Arness was a subscriber to the magazine, and so he finds out how to get a hold of me, and he writes me this letter. And in the letter, he said, "I'm writing you to congratulate you on beating the system." He said, "Because I was once in the entertainment business, and I know what that took." So I knew by him, he knew just exactly how much determination it took. And so that was, I mean, you talk about, that made my day, made my year, because, you know, he's my hero anyway. And to have him write me and let me know how he felt and that he was, you know, hey, man, you done it, you know. And
right.
So anyway, I sent him a couple of records after that. And, he wrote me back and thanked me for them. And so then about 3 years ago, he wrote me another letter. And he said, "I want you to know that we played your Christmas CD at our Christmas dinner." I mean, what a gentleman, you know. It was awesome.
Well, that is fantastic. That is fantastic. Well, you know, not only have you had a great career as a writer and now as a performer, but you've also been involved in some video, some movie projects. What was the Dixie Burns?
Yeah, I was. And that kind of maybe stemmed from not just the music, but also because I started writing the Western audio novels. You know, I wrote Braver Man, and now I've got the sequence out, Braver Man's Ghost Town. And, you know, I got four, I think there's four of those out, four audios in a paperback. Well, anyway, in writing that, you know, I thought, you know, I've been writing for this project for years, and that just spurred it on for me to do this. I wanted to write a project that involved the Jesse James era and the West, and I wanted it to start with the Civil War, because that's where everything started from, the war,
right,
and everybody headed west, you know. And so I wanted to start there, So I wrote the song Dixie Burns because Atlanta was burning. And so the album itself is called A Proud Land because they were all proud people. That's what that was about, a lot of it. And so I was able to write from there and bring in the Jesse James era, from Jesse James to the West and a man with his horse, you know. And
right,
the whole thing,
right.
The wagon train, the whole business. And so in doing that, I could just see the film. So I thought, let's put the Civil War film together. And here's the trick to this. This film is five songs counting credit. And the songs tell the story. It's more than a video. It's a story. But the songs tell the story, and then there's narration in it.
Mm.
And the trick is when, and most guys won't tackle this, and I understand it, but the trick is to have the following song that's going to follow the last one be as strong or stronger than the one you just heard so that you hold them people into that story.
Right,
and it's,
right.
It's got to tell the story. And if you fail, if your next song's weak, game over. You're done.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
This thing turned out to be more than I even thought it could be. We won it won 6 awards. I won overall performance award for directing and lyric music, and then one of the Larry Crawley, who's a big time writer and one of the top acoustic players in town. He has been with me now 10, 12 years, and I had him go in the studio. I said, I want you to write your melody with this guitar. I mean, I got the melody, but what I want you to do is play it, and I want you to think 1800s.
Right.
And he did it, and so the Hollywood small screen and the music critics here in town voted that as one of the best interpretations with an instrument of a song of the whole thing. So he won an award for that. Anyway,
oh,
all
great.
Total, it was about 6-7 awards given for that thing, and it was rated a 5-star film, so I'm really proud of it. You can get that one at, I think they sell that at Bookworks Online, I believe it's
okay.
called, bookworksonline.com. And that's the best place to get it because you can buy it cheap there.
Okay. Bookworks.com, and they can get the movie Dixie Burns there. Is the song
Bookworks,
Ride?
Bookworks Online.
Yeah, is the song Ride from that?
The song Ride? No. The song Ride come from the first album I cut, which was the when I left Warner Brothers. I cut the Hang Around the Moon record.
Okay. Well, that had a little bit of the Frank and Jesse thing theme in it as well.
That's what it is, yeah.
Yeah.
It sure did.
Yeah. We'd like to take just a minute to take a break, and let's play that one for folks. It's Ride by Royal Wade Kimes. And we'll get a little Frank and Jesse going in this one, and we'll be back in just a minute to talk again with Roy Wade Kimes.
First time I saw it, it was tacked up on a tree, dead or alive. Picture look like me. Well, the South is all but gone, and so's my family. I was branded an outlaw, too much rebel in me. Ride, you gotta ride. Hide, you gotta hide. Ride, to send you straight to hell, boy. Ride. Say I robbed a train and I held up a bank. Somebody's getting rich on me and my brother Frank. The chances look good, I won't last too long. With a price on my head, it could be someone I've known. Ride, you gotta ride. Hide, you gotta hide. When the law is on your trail, son, ride. They send you straight to hell, boy.
That's the Gentleman Outlaw, Royal Wade Kimes, with his song Ride. And, you know, I could almost see where that song could have been in this movie.
Oh, yeah, it could have been.
Yeah.
We wrote one similar to it for the album. But, yeah, it could have been in the movie real easy.
Oh, goodness. Well, you know, you've got your writing that you're doing, you're performing and traveling around. You also are still active as a horseback rider, and you've got the Mount Royal Trail Ride that's coming up October 3rd through the 5th this year. And is how many years has that been going on now?
This will be the 9th year for it. Turned into quite an event. It's one of the premier events in the state of Arkansas now, and it's held right there on that border range where I rode the range at. You know, that border range was also, some of those trails I use are the same ones that Bell Star and Cole Younger and different outlaws rode. And in fact, you can see remnants of it, wagon tracks through rocks and stuff like that. You know, it's quite something. And where the camp is, you can stand there at that camp and look 80 miles into Oklahoma.
Wow.
It's gorgeous. I mean, it's just beautiful. And so it's quite the ride, and I really enjoy it. We raise money for the backpacks for children, little kids who have nothing to eat from Friday till Monday. We pack their little packs, and they go home, they've got something to eat. And so I've been doing charities for, you know, different organizations, and they'd always send me to places like Ohio or Nevada or somewhere. And I was coming back one day, I thought, you know, I need to take this back home, and I need to do something for my own, you know, where I'm from. And
right.
So I went out there, and I looked around to find a charity that I thought was worthwhile, and they spent every nickel on those kids, and that was the one. So,
well, I think that's great. You know, a lot of times people don't think about, and I remember having a conversation some time ago with folks about the fact that these kids that are on a food program in school, a lot of times when they go home, they don't really get a good meal until they come back to school on Monday. And, so talk to us a little bit about the ride. What takes place? What can people participate in and enjoy when they are part of the Mount Royal Ride?
Yeah, the ride actually, most people come in on a Thursday, and the ride is Friday and Saturday. And now they're starting to come in on Tuesday, and they're camping the whole week. That's a different deal, you know. I mean, they call in for a different price for that. But, you know, we ride, then we have the chuck wagon dinners. We actually have a real chuck wagon with a real chuck wagon cook. And, I mean, he can cook. He's to die for. And, I mean, it's a blast to do the whole thing. I do a campfire show on Friday night and bring in one or two of my band members. And then on Saturday night, we do a full-blown, blow-it-out, kicking concert, and it's under a 160-foot-long by 62-foot-wide tent.
Wow.
One of the largest tents ever erected in the northwest Arkansas, Oklahoma territory. And so we do it under that, and we have people coming from all over the United States. In fact, we've even had people fly in from the UK to see the concert.
Oh, that's great.
But people bring their own horses, and, I mean, once in a while we can provide a horse, but not very often. I don't like to get into that, but they bring the horses, and you stay in your own trailer there on the campsite, and the first day you'll head probably north and or south, and next day you'll go the other direction, and you don't see the same thing twice, really, you know. it's quite something. It's big territory. It's rich in history, and that's where the old hanging Isaac Parker Judge was. And it's a lot of fun, and I really enjoy it. I've got a good little horse now that I ride lead with. I had another little bald-faced gilding horse. The little gal's listening today. She's at Mile High Honey Country, Deanie, and she hounds him. And but we've got a lot of stuff to see up there.
Well, we would encourage people to kind of put that on their calendar. We want folks to go to your website, and what is that website, Roy Wade?
Well, it's Royal, like Royal Crown Cola. It's Royal Wade Kimes, KIMES.com.
Okay.
And you can actually get your application there, and if you got any questions, there's a phone number there that you can call, which I think is 615-351-3167. And they call that and get information if they don't, you know, if they got questions and that kind of thing. But it's fun. It's, it's become a family in a lot of ways. I've given away now 52 or 3 $200 belt buckles for people who ride 5 years.
Oh, that's great.
It's awesome. And this last year, I had a good time. See what I did, Gary. I'm also an artist. I draw. And, in fact, I just gave a lecture at Columbia State College in Tennessee about art, how to draw. And I thought, you know, I want to draw every one of these guys that's got a buckle, you know. So there was 50 of them.
Wow.
And so I started in January, and by the time a trail ride got around to the next fall, I had the last one drawn. But I got to tell you, I was burnt out after that. But I was getting burnt out, but I got them all, and it looks just like them, too.
Oh, that's great. Well, you're a multi-talented fella, and a songwriter, a performer, an artist. You're a great guy to be giving back to a worthy cause like this, and this is the ninth year for the Mount Royal Trail Ride, and again, that's October 3rd through the 5th. You have a new album that's been released called Proud Land, and where can they get that?
Well, Proud Land they can buy just about anywhere, Amazon, RoyWadeKimes.com, CDBaby.com, and it's in all of the – I have major distribution, so it's in all of the – just about every .com you can pull it up and buy it. And then it's in a lot of, you know, freestanding brick stores too, but – Most people now, almost everything's bought on .com.
Right, right. People go online. Well, listen, you have been so much fun to talk with, and would love to have you come back and visit with us again sometime.
Well, I like it. It's fun.
Well, we look forward to having you come back and join us again. You also are on Facebook, so we would encourage people to go and like Royal Wade Kimes on Facebook. Check out his website, RoyalWadeKimes.com. Just a good guy and a lot of fun to talk with. And we're going to close out this segment of the program with Northfield Town. And
here we go.
So anyway, Wade, good to talk to you. Look forward to having you come back again. And thanks so much for taking the time to join us today.
I really had a good time, Gary.
Well, good deal. Thanks so much. This is Northfield Town by the Gentleman Outlaw Royal Wade Kimes, and when we come back, we'll be talking with Dutch Henry on Equestrian Legacy Radio.
Your watch, check your guns, cinch that horse real tight, be ready to run. Yeah, we're too far from home for anything to go wrong in this Northfield town. Don't know the road,
or
the
lay of the land.
Every mother's son have a gun in his hand. Now if it goes down bad,
do it all himself.
You gotta get out, don't you hang around
this snowfield town.
Alright, right.
Keep your cool, don't you lose your head. You're just one bad move and we could wind up dead. And we're too far from home for anything to go wrong with this snowfield town. Don't know the road,
know the road,
or the lay of the land,
lay of the land.
Different mother's son, have a gun in his hand. Now if it goes down bad,
pop,
just to hit it on himself.
You gotta get out, don't you hang around
this snowfield town.
You gotta get out, don't you hang around
this snowfield town.
Listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, and joining us now on the show is Dutch Henry, author of We'll Have the Summer. He has his Coffee Clutch blog. He's a freelance writer for Trailblazer and Natural Horse. Just an all-around great guy, and we're happy to welcome Dutch back to the show today. So, Dutch, how are you doing?
Doing real good. Doing real good. Thanks for the invite.
Well, we just didn't have enough time to visit a couple of weeks ago. And there's too much to talk about with you, so we had to have you come back so we could kind of continue our conversation again. We were talking last week. We visited a little bit about how you got started with horses and how they had made a difference in your life. I know that two important people in your life are Kessie and Robin, not necessarily in that order. And you made a statement. I don't remember whether it was on the air or whether we were just talking, but there was something that you said about both of those, both Robin and Kessie, that had an impact. And do you remember what that was?
Well, Robin, Robin is, of course, my wife, and she's just the sweetest gal that ever walked the earth, and I always say that whatever good I learned about life, I learned from her.
Well, that's her.
And I certainly wouldn't be worth very much without her.
Well, that's exactly what you said about Robin, and then there was something similar about Kessie that you said. Do you remember what that was?
Kessie's my mare.
I know.
Kessie takes care of me. I have a few pain in the neck physical things, and Kessie kind of takes care of me when we go ride. I ride a lot, and we start every day out there in the barn having coffee with her and looking at the morning come up and watching the birds and the chickens and Kessie's little attitude. You know, Kessie brings with her attitude I've been around a lot of horses, and she may not be the best one I was ever around, but she's right up there.
Well, she's become a very well-known horse. I mean, it's kind of like Roy and Trigger and Gene and Champion and Dutch and Kessie. I mean, you guys are just right in there. So.
You know, when I started writing on the Facebook stuff and the blog stuff, for a long, long time, back when I was working with Diane Sepp to rehabilitate horses, one of the important parts of rehabilitating horses that have been abused and done the things that they do to them in the Tennessee Walking Horse Show Ring. One of the things that's important to bring them around is just spend time with them doing nothing. Of course, I think I started that back in my childhood days on the farm where I grew up, but that's something that kind of stuck with me my whole life. I always look for quiet moments around animals. And so when I started writing on the blog and stuff and on Facebook, you know, I start every day with my thermos in my chair, and I sit out there in the barn with old Kessie and think and or don't think. Lots of time. I spend a lot of time not thinking, guys. But then I start jotting down about stuff, and then and that's what happened. I just start jotting down stuff on the social media about Kessie and me, and it's really fun that people enjoy reading about it. Always try to write upbeat, happy stuff. I mean, I don't want to fool anybody. There's days, plenty of days, Kessie and I don't see eye to eye, but I don't tend to write about that because I don't want to give it any credence, you know.
Right.
One of the things I learned from Diane, too, was ignore the negative and celebrate the positive. And so we write about mostly the funny stuff. Yep, that's old Miss Kessie.
That's old Miss Kessie. Well, it's always fun to start the day to see what you've got to post on Facebook, and then to go to the Coffee Clutch blog. And I believe you told me that you had people that were sending you emails from South Africa. I mean, you've just kind of gone worldwide with your Facebook presence, with your blog too.
I have people following the blog for. Like you do the radio show, you know, the electronic world can take you just everywhere, and you don't know where.
Right.
Last week I wrote a story about blanketing, and I had written another story about blanketing your horses a while ago, and that was most of the blog posts get, you know, a few hundred readers, you know, maybe close to 1,000, but that's not too awful. That blanketing one, that was just too silly. That went around. That has now had over 2,000 people read it, and it's got a string of comments and a string of comments on Facebook where I share the link. But I picked up picked up 40 new Facebook friends in a day, and two of them from South Africa.
Wow!
I was reading the name, you know, where the town, and man, I don't recognize that anywhere. So then, you know, there's that little old Google map on there, and I looked on there, and I wrote back, and I said to her, the first one, I said, "You're my first friend from South Africa."
She
wrote back and said, "Well, there'll probably be more." And like 15 minutes later, there was another one. But it is really,
well,
I'll tell you what, Facebook, you know, my agent made me get on Facebook back before We'll Have the Summer come out, and I never had a dream of what it was, or didn't have a clue, but the friends, oh my gosh, you know, your friends you make on Facebook really are friends.
That's true.
They care about you, you care about them, you know, and we don't always get around, like in real life, you don't really get around to acknowledging everybody every day, because you get, you know, pretty many friends, but you know, you see a lot of support, and just a lot of, you can get answers to questions, and it's just kind of a neat thing. I'm not sure everybody realizes how neat it is. A lot of people like to tease it, but I think it's neater than it is not neat.
Well, it's amazing. I've told people before, Facebook can either be a very good thing or it can be a very bad thing, and it really depends on how you want to direct it. But yeah, a lot of great friends that are made through Facebook, a lot of great contacts, and you know, you wouldn't be on the show today if it weren't for Facebook. And so
right.
it's interesting how that works. There's several things that I want to talk about with you, and some things that we really didn't get into a couple of weeks ago when you were on. One of the things that we wanted to talk about, I'd like to talk about first, is the Therapy for Therapy Horses program that you have. and talk with us a little bit about that.
All right. Like I said a couple minutes ago, a number of years ago, I worked for pretty many years with a terrific woman named Diane Sept rehabilitating horses. And that was, and I did that for a number of years, and I learned a whole lot from her about the biomechanics of horses. Brought my own, and I had some notions that I, you know, I when I write on when I write on the blog about my position and attitude on stuff today, I want to make sure everybody understands. When I first met Diane Sept, I came with my own issues, not my own issues, but my own attitudes on what things were and how things are with horses and how they should be. And folks, let me tell you, she rolled the rock uphill for a long time to change me. but, you know, seeing is believing. It was a riding friend that introduced me to her. Even though we only lived a mile apart, I never had met her. Drove past her place and saw the outfit. But so anyway, so I was working with the horses there, and I learned a lot about their mental attitude, their physical carriage, their proper posture, the things we can do, little teeny tiny things that we can do, not add any work to our day or our time, but just different little things, how we can stand and how we can walk and how we can hold the lead rope if we're leading them, or how we can walk behind them if we're just driving them along at liberty, as people like to say, and just do things just a little bit different and take the, my word, not her, take the tension out. You know, you can move a horse, you can move a horse while she's tense, or you can move a horse while she's relaxed, and that's up to you. That's up to you, the human. So these horses, when they would come in, and they'd be, and some of them would be just flat mean because they were tired of it. Some of them would be just all sad and dejected. Some of them would, you know, I'm thinking about one in particular. It was 6 months till you could put a saddle blanket on him without him wanting to just dehide you. So anyway, so I learned all that stuff, and then we moved down here to Virginia, and I kind of quit doing everything, and I started writing these stories and stuff that you talked about, and I was doing phone interviews like we're talking today, and then I decided that I wanted to go out and look at some of these therapeutic riding centers, and I noticed that the first time I was at one, I thought the horses, don't misunderstand me, everywhere I've been, they've been well cared for, well fed, well housed, but that's just like, as we know with all horses, that's only part of it. That's only part of what you do with a horse.
Right.
I was told, actually more than once, that I write from the inside out. Well, I look at horses from the inside out, too. I see, because of Diane, I see stuff that I know I didn't see before her. So I noticed the horses were kind of sad and kind of sore, and, you know, and I'm not talking about sore because of saddles that don't fit or anything like that. So I kind of didn't, I just ignored it, did my interview, wrote the story. Then I went out to, after the third one, I called Diane and I told her what I was experiencing, what I was feeling. And she said, oh my, yes, lesson horses and therapy horses are martyrs. And they get, by their very nature, they give of themselves to take care of the people, and they actually hurt themselves. And if they didn't have that nature, they wouldn't be good lesson horses or therapy horses, because they would rebel in some way or be, you know, uncooperative.
Right.
So we put our heads together, and based on all the stuff that she had taught me over the years, we put together half a dozen or 10 little exercises that people can do to help the horses maintain proper posture, and it's all based on Peggy Cummings, Linda Tellington Jones, and a little bit of Sally Swift. And everybody, I encourage everybody, if they want to look this stuff up, buy their books, Peggy Cummings, Linda Tellington Jones, and Sally Swift. Sally Swift is more for the writing, but some of the leading and stuff, but Peggy Cummings has a lot of the, she calls it connected writing and connected groundwork.
Right.
And it helps to encourage the horse to have proper posture. And Linda Tellington Jones has her team touch circles, but a lot of the same exercises, they're very closely related. So
right.
We put this little stuff together, and then I started contacting therapy places and offering to come out and teach the volunteers clinics for free, just pay my transportation, and put on clinics to teach the volunteers to do these exercises to help the horses. I'm reminded of, and this is how important this is. I wrote a story about David Litchman, a five-star Pirelli trainer, really fabulous, fabulous, wonderful man. If anybody doesn't know David Litchman, Google him and get to know him. He's just a wonderful man. But we were doing the interview for the story, and he said years ago, and I did the interview a while, I just remember the story. I may get some stuff time-wise out of sync. But he was, what got him interested in horse therapeutic riding, too, he's very interested in that.
Right.
Is years ago, he was watching his daughter was involved with a therapeutic riding program. And they were happened to be, I don't remember the circumstances, but they actually happened to be on an Indian reservation. And there was a program going on, and the instructor asked to use David's horse. So they took David's horse and did the therapy with David's horse. And then a shaman was there with him. And when the horse came back, the shaman took the horse and walked away with it. And when he came back and gave David his horse, he asked him, why'd you take my horse away? And he said he needed to be cleansed. That's a lot of pressure and a lot of tension on a horse when they do that, and he needed to have his mind cleansed before I gave him back to you. People
wow.
don't think about, yeah, I like to share that story when I can, because that's coming from David Litchman.
right.
But,
well, one of the things that people, I think, probably need to realize, Dutch, is that these horses are giving of themselves, both when they're doing lessons and therapy, and it's work. It's work. And if they're doing a lot of that, then kind of like people, they need to be refreshed both mentally and physically, and I would guess that's what your therapy for therapy horses does.
It does, and it. One of the things too that all less and most of them do, but not all of them, because you know we don't always think. None of us think of everything, but lesson horses and therapy horses should get a fair amount of time on the trail. They shouldn't just go from lesson to their stall or
right.
program to their stall or even to their turnout. Even if they have a nice 2-acre pasture. They should still get some work on the trail. Trail riding, just that was one of the things we incorporated up there with Diane when we were working. When they got to a certain point, then that was one of my big parts, so I'd take them trail riding. And that's actually how I got involved in endurance and limited distance riding, was taking those horses on those programs and take them up to another. And a lot of times I would only do half. They used to tease me, "Are you going to finish this one today?" Well, I don't know, it depends on the horse. We did it to show the horses that they can go somewhere around a whole lot of excitement, trailers, noise, and people, and not associate it with going back in the show ring. They were doing something else. And it was fun. But therapy horses and lesson horses should get some time on the trail. And one of the big things that I'd like to share just in general, one of the single biggest things you can do for your horse, whether it's a therapy horse or a lesson horse or not, is teach it to rock back off its forehand. Ask it when you can do it while you're leading it too, you can find this really very well described in Peggy Cummings' book, or on my Facebook page. If you look up the therapy, if you look at the photo albums on my Facebook page, there's an album there of Therapy for Horses, and the rock back is shown in there. And just ask them to rock back. If you look at a horse when they're standing still, you can kind of see most of the time their energy is on their forehand. So when you lead them from point A to point B, you know, when you get there, when they stop, ask them to rock back, not move their feet back, just shift their weight back. And that little exercise there, that little one single tiny little exercise does so much to put the biomechanics back where they're supposed to be on the horse.
Right. Well, it's interesting because of the therapy horses are doing a great deal of good for these people that have some disabilities and challenges. And then you're coming right along with your therapy for therapy horses and helping them both physically and mentally improve. Kind of reminds me of a song that we're going to take a break for just a minute and listen to. It's called Who Saved Who, and it's by our mutual friend Marianne Kennedy. And Dutch, you need to go back and in our archives listen to the program we did with Marianne and David Litchman. We did that when he was
there
doing his North American tour. But we've got folks that have been calling in to talk to you, and some are holding, and I'm sure some are going to call back in just a little bit. Let's listen to Who Saved Who by Marianne Kennedy. When we come back, I want to talk with you about a great book that you wrote called We'll Have the Summer, and we'll take some calls from some of our audience out there. The number they can call into is 213-943-3396, 213-943-3396. And when we come back, we'll be talking more with Dutch Henry, and we'll take a few of your calls. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio. Saved Who by Marianne Kennedy, and you're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, and we're talking with Dutch Henry. And Dutch, we want to talk just a little bit about the book that you have written called We'll Have the Summer. And it just happens that Marianne is on the cover of that book, along with another friend, Jerry Carey. And I think Helen took the photo. I think Helen took the photograph for that, didn't she?
Helen took the photograph. It was Helen's idea, and that's Mary Ann Forrest Brave on the cover too. And the cover was pretty interesting. When it came time, usually authors don't get any say with the publisher on what's going on with the cover, but we were having a hard time with the cover, and I had met Helen and Jerry on a Best of America ride, and she had, you can't help but fall in love with those two the minute you meet them. And, and so we kept in touch, and of course, I actually sent Helen, when I had finished the novel, but it was still just a manuscript, I didn't have an agent yet, didn't know what was going on, and but I sent the manuscript to Helen just for fun after we met, you know, the next week. And she read it. They were somewhere. And she said it so engrossed her that she read the whole thing home on her way home on her iPhone. And she said she'd be crying and telling Jerry to let her alone. she really, obviously really enjoyed it. Then some time passed, and she started sending me pictures. You know, she does a lot of beautiful photographs, and she takes pictures of wild horses a lot. And she sent me some pictures of the wild horses. And those wild horses on the cover are pictures that she took as well. So it comes time that we have problems with the cover, and I asked the publisher, could I send the photo in for the cover? And we don't really do that. And it evolved that I could. So I immediately called Helen and said what my dilemma was, and asked her if she wanted to do the photo for the cover. And she said, I do, and I might know. Now, she didn't know at that time I had already met Mary Ann and had written a story about Mary Ann for Trail Rider magazine. I didn't know Mary Ann when I wrote the novel, but I knew her by this time. But Helen didn't know that. And she says, because I don't think the story was published yet in Trail Rider at that time. I think it had just, so she says, and I think I even know someone that'll be a perfect model and has a black and white horse. So the next day she writes back and she says, yes, Mary Ann Kennedy just lives a couple miles from me, and she has a black and white horse and this and that. And we can do the photo shoot at her place. Then, of course, I told her about the story, and it was just all fun. And so Robin and I went out to Mary Ann's ranch there in Nashville, and Helen was a full-day photo shoot. And it was cold. Gary, holy cats, it was cold. But they had a dress like days in Arizona, you know. And Brave was just an incredible horse. And Jerry, we didn't have a man, you know. So poor Jerry. If you know Jerry at all, you know how accommodating and what a wonderful guy he is. And, you know, I think it was Helen that said, you're going to be the husband. So that's how Jerry's on the cover. Some interesting things about that, though, too, is, and we got to finish the cover story first. In for those of our friends that read the novel, they know there's a preface to it about the cover and all the coincidences in the story that I wrote before I knew Mary Ann, and all the similarities to her own life.
Right.
And including Brave, her horse Brave has black and white paint his right eye is blue. Well, the horse in my novel, his name is Comanche, and his right eye is blue. The daughter in the story's name is Callie, and Marianne has a horse named Callie, spelt the same way.
Right.
And it's just on and on coincidences. Some of them I can't remember right now. I'm sorry. Another one coincidence, not related to Marianne, though, but related to Jerry, is that in Sam, that my character in my novel was in Vietnam the same years that Jerry was in Vietnam.
Wow, wow. Well, it was just meant to be. That cover was meant to be.
Just list and list of stuff. But, yeah, she's a
– yeah.
And she's just – Marianne is just a great friend to anybody that knows her and just do whatever she can to help anybody. And Helen, too. I mean, Helen, oh, my gosh.
Well, a lot of great folks in this horse world that we're in, and that's a great thing.
Oh, my, yeah.
But Jerry, let's talk about the book and tell us what the book is about, and then I know that has had an effect on people and programs that they're working on and effects of people's lives. So tell us what the book is about.
Well, I wanted to write a story of a powerful, enduring love. And to do that, you need to start at the back end, you know, to work front. And it's stories about set on a guest ranch in Arizona, my present day, a long married couple, Mary and Sam, and she's actually dying of cancer. And this is going to be their last summer. And that's what it's called. We'll have the summer. The title is an interesting story. I didn't have a title. And when I'm writing the story, I wrote a scene where he realizes she's not going to continue her treatments anymore. Of course, pretty emotional scene. Mm-hmm. And he asks her, "How long do we have?" And she says, "We'll have the summer." And then I said, "Well, now I have a title." But it's about their love, their reflecting on their life, and also running this working cattle ranch, guest ranch. And one of the things they did there to stay afloat, you know, make some extra money, was they opened it up to be a guest ranch, and people came and spent the summer and worked the summer there.
Right.
And this particular summer, a couple comes with a pretty troubled young teenage daughter, and over the course of the summer, it's actually a subplot that some people think is the primary plot, but for me, the love was the primary plot, and the subplot was the young girl and how that summer changed her life. And she learned how to embrace life from a dying woman and a sick horse. Comanche plays a big role in his recovery in that story, too. And, I got one of the most powerful emails I got. People write me, and I wanted to write a love story, but it touches people in a way. And I think like Royal Wade's songs, they touch people. We as authors and artists, we do what we do, and we see it coming where it's coming from. But then our work touches people in ways that we may not have imagined it would, and that is the case for me with "We'll Have the Summer," and I. A fellow wrote me one time, told me 72, and he said, "I read your book because a friend told me to read it, you don't know me, but I lost my wife to breast cancer 10 years ago, and like Mary, my wife did what she wanted to do on her last day."
Wow.
She spent it with our grandchildren like Mary did what she did. And he says, "Thank you for making it so real." And it gave me time to spend with my wife. So, you know, I wrote back, and it was just really hard to. About a month later, or a month or two later, he wrote me again. He said, "I just wanted to let you know I read your book again. I wanted to spend more time with my wife."
Wow, wow.
I had a lady write me and say that she's on her third husband. She has a daughter a lot like Barbara, and now because of my novel, she understands her daughter better.
Right.
And just things like it's humbling, and I don't even know what to say. It's my hope for writing the story was to celebrate pure, uncommon, enduring love.
Well, you never know what type of effect that both the words that you say or the words that you write will have on people's lives, and you have no idea what the words in a song and how that will affect people
that's
as well.
That's right.
Yeah, so
another
it's kind
theme
of
in there too. Another theme in there too that I purposely worked in was about the Mustangs and the wild horses. Part of
yeah.
the story is they protect a small band of wild horses. They actually lease BLM land, and it's a big deal protecting a small band, because we all know what's going on with our
right,
our wild horses.
Right.
And I tried to do that on an upbeat way, and there's some fun in it. So that's that story.
All right.
I had written three before that. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say that we want to encourage our listeners, if you have not read the book, go and pick up We'll Have the Summer by Dutch Henry, and that's available on, what, Amazon? And what other ways can they purchase that book?
They can Amazon's the easiest. They can – it's not really stocked in any bookstores because it's really hard to do, any bookstore can order it, but the easiest is really Amazon, or just write to me, DutchHenry@Hughes.net.
Okay.
Well, you can. My website is DutchHenryAuthor.com.
DutchHenryAuthor.com, and they can also friend you on Facebook as well.
Yeah, I would love that.
Yeah, so we want to encourage people to do that. And, you know, right now we've got a young lady that has been patiently waiting to visit with us just a little bit. And so let's bring Martha on the line. And, Martha, I've got your line opened up. And how are you doing today?
Awesome. Doing great. Appreciate y'all letting me call in.
Well, glad to have you call. And as we were listening to Mary Ann Kennedy's song, Who Saved Who, you were talking a little bit about a program that you are using. Talk with us a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, after seeing a link to Dutch's book, I decided to order it and see. I do some work with equine-assisted learning and just really building a business doing that. And my background was education and teaching many with at-risk, and wondered if his novel would be a way to combine the language arts curriculum, the life skills curriculum, and equine-assisted learning. And so when I purchased it, I really kind of purchased it with that hope. And as I read it, continued to be even more excited, because I felt like it really became a wonderful way to integrate those different modalities of learning to reach out to at-risk youth in a way that hasn't been done before. So I wrote Dutch and told him what I had thought about doing and planning, and he encouraged me, and I'm very grateful that he did. He's nudged me several times. So I'm really at the point of actually I've just gotten the second date to do the proposal to the local school board to present those lesson plans, and I'm in the process of getting the lesson plans. Actually, in my case, they'll be self-published, but hopefully self-published so that they can go out to other people that would want to use Dutch's novel to integrate language arts, life skills, and equine-assisted learning in more of a public classroom setting.
Wow, wow.
So was thrilled for the opportunity to one, have the wonderful vehicle of his story because it was so real and it addressed so many issues that kids are going through these days. And two, because of his encouragement and his willing to actually participate in the lesson plans by doing webinars with the classes that would be using the novel.
Well, that's great.
So it really became a great way to integrate creative writing and journaling and his role model into the classroom, as well as having the experiential activities through the equine-assisted learning. So it just, I'm real excited about the possibilities, and certainly it, you know, it wouldn't be without Dutch's novel and without his encouragement, for sure.
Wow. Well, how many young people do you think a program like this might touch?
Oh, hopefully everyone that gets involved with it, including some teachers and guidance counselors that might be involved too. The purpose of the 8-week unit is to draw the students and the teachers that co-facilitate into a relationship with the horses, and through that be able to find metaphors that tie in solutions to problems that they have in everyday life. So you're trying to bridge the activities in the round pen with the horses metaphorically to problems that they have in life, and you're doing it in a way that you're creating a line of communication and relationship with the horses.
Well, that's great. Now, what part of the country are you in, Martha?
South Carolina.
South Carolina. Okay.
Can't you tell by how funny she talks?
Well, you know, she she could. she could be from parts of Tennessee too, so it's kind of hard to tell.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Martha, how if people were interested in finding out more about the program that you're putting together, how could they contact you?
Well, they could contact me through my website, which is Grace Hill Ventures, or my email, which is mitfost@yahoo.com. And hopefully within another 3 to 6 weeks, I'll have a published set of lesson plans that will be linked to Dutch's novel, so that we could, you know, tie in his willingness to be a part of it, and his book, certainly, which is the catalyst for it.
Well, that is fantastic. Now, give me your website again one time, because that's easier for people to remember than an email address.
Okay. It's gracehillventures.com.
All right. gracehillventures.com. And so you can reach out to Martha if you're listening and would like to find out more about the program that she's putting in place to help these young people. And Martha, I appreciate so much you calling in. Dutch, anything you want to say to Martha before we move to our next segment?
Thanks a lot, Martha. Thanks for calling, and thanks for all the work you put into this. It really is a fabulous plan, how she put it together, follows the novel, all the events and trials that Barbara faces and Mary faces, and the things she incorporated that into groundwork with the horses and creates dynamic little lesson plans where the children will read 3 or 4 chapters, do the classwork literally off the book, and then incorporate the activities, that the emotions that the people faced in the story, with actual events, doing things with the horses. For instance, the first lesson, of course, is the first 3 chapters. And in the first 3 chapters of my story, the people, everything's just coming together as it would in the beginning of a story. Mary's facing different challenges and making decisions. Sam's having to wrestle with what that means. They find their once champion horse at death's door at an auction and bring him home. And then the people start arriving at the ranch, and they're trying to figure out what a horse ranch is. And so her first lesson is the kids coming out to the round pen and kind of just looking at the horses and figuring out what a horse is and watching what a horse does. Not really. And then as the things evolve and things grow, they do things with the horses and have challenges with the horses and each other. And she just, she understated how well she put this together and how this is a academic feat that she did. It's really well done, well thought out, well planned, and easy to follow. And I really am so impressed with how perfectly it flows together.
Well, we're excited that there are programs like this that are being put in place, and the contribution that both of you are making to help folks. And Martha, thanks again for calling in and visiting with us. And again, that's gracehillventures.com. You can reach out to visit that website and communicate with Martha there. And, you know, horses are such an important part of our lives. They have such a healing property to them. And we're going to take a quick break and come back and visit some more with Dutch Henry. We're going to listen to This Love of Horses by Mary Ann Kennedy, and you're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio.
Love of horses that we share.
Horses by Marianne Kennedy. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, and we're talking with Dutch Henry. And Dutch,
yeah.
You really touch people's lives in ways that you just can't foresee and imagine with some of the things that you write about. And the relationships that are developed through your writing, both for the magazine articles and with your blog and with books like We'll Have the Summer. And so kudos to you for the success that you're having with that. Let's talk just a little bit about, you've posted a couple of times the last few days about an interview that you did for Heartbeats that's coming out in Trailblazer in the March issue. And, tell us about your conversation with Michael Martin Murphy.
Oh my goodness. What a wonderful guy. When that was your fault. You're the one that stirred that up, and made all the connections. And thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
Michael Martin Murphy, everyone mostly knows him probably for that song Wildfire. But there's a lot more to him that, as with most of our people, we don't really know of our celebrities. We don't really know how much good they're doing behind the scenes, and he's got a number of charities going on to help people and help preserve the American West and the American Western way of life and thought. He has a foundation. Gosh, I can't remember the name of the foundation now, but it's Western something.
The Western Heritage?
Western Heritage Foundation, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And that exists to preserve the thought, the meaning, the poetry, the art, the music. And then he also has the Fiona Rose Murphy Foundation to raise money for primarily bone disorders. Granddaughter was born with brittle bone disease, and she was born with 7 broken bones. And he made it his mission to be able to figure out a way to not only help her, but help other children and their families that are faced with dealing with that sort of complication in life. And so I wanted to write about that. I wanted to write a little bit about his music and about just himself. It was a fun interview, but a trying weekend. It was lit. and I called Bobby Joe, my editor at Trailblazer, and I said, for my April story, I'd like to do Michael Martin Murphy. Because I wanted to promote the big ride that he has coming up. He has a big fundraising ride coming up, national ride,
right,
that you're very well aware of and very deeply involved in, raising money for the Fiona Rose Murphy Foundation. And the ride is June 6th and 7th. And knowing my schedule with Trailblazer and what, how it comes out and all that, I knew that we had to get it in the April issue, because Trailblazer comes out the month after.
Trailblazer doesn't
come out the month before. So I sent Bobby Joe an email and said, and I didn't want to do it until we had all, until we had everything scheduled, because if I want to interview folks, if I want to interview Gary Holt for a story, I can just send an email and interview him for a story. Michael Martin Murphy, you can't just get to some of these people. You got to go through people. So I knew that there'd be a little chain of events that would have to occur. And so after we had the confirmation that we were going to do this, I sent Bobby Joe a note and
she said, oh, that's wonderful, but it won't be in the April issue because the April issue is going to have other things in it and you won't be having our deep column in April. So we'll have to put it in the March issue, and we're already going to print. So if you can get it to me by – and also in the March issue is David Litchman's story about his North American Horses Helping Humans tour.
Right.
So she said we wanted to move that to be a feature article anyway, so we'll move that to be a feature article, and we'll put you in that in your Heartbeats column with Michael. So cool. So we're scheduled to have an interview at 12 o'clock Friday afternoon, and takes me 10 to 15 hours to write a story for a magazine. So I had myself all planned out how to do that, and actually the interview was 3 o'clock, not 12 o'clock, and actually it wasn't 3 o'clock, it was almost 7 o'clock till it ended up happening Friday night.
Goodness.
But we went through the interview and got a great – and actually, I like – there's more humor to it. And I wrote it – if anybody didn't read it yet, I wrote this all on a blog yesterday or the day before, and it's just too funny not to read. Because it's like one of those things that once it starts out having stuff go not wrong but not go as planned, it just needs to happen more and more. Well, it did. But we got her done, and I like to have 2 hours for an interview because I do an interview just like we're talking here. I don't ask questions particularly, and I don't prod, and I don't, you know, I just kind of visit, and then I write the story. I usually need 2 hours to do that. And so Michael actually called me, and when he had been in the desert, driving across the desert, didn't have cell service, so that's why we couldn't do the interview when we were supposed to. But when he got to Reno and he got to his motel, he called me, and he said, what would you like to know? You have 45 minutes.
Goodness. Well,
we got it all done, and I told him that I need to have it back. I told him the time pressure. I need to have it back for, and they did. I'll tell you what. Between you and his publicist and Michael and his assistant, I got the story written and got it out to him Saturday night, late. It was like 11 o'clock, but it's only 8 o'clock where he is, so that worked. They got it right back to me with only had one edit, and if it's not too bloviating, I'd like to share what his publicist said. He really enjoyed my conversational way of writing. So I thought that was
cool. That's great. That's pretty cool. We appreciate you. Yeah, we appreciate you putting doing the article, and appreciate the fact that it's coming out in the March issue on there. So we're looking forward to that as well. And I'm going to and let me brag on you for just a minute. I think you said you had made history because you have two articles in one magazine in the same month, and that's probably a first for you.
That is absolutely a first.
That's everybody's going to think
And think of the two people, David Litchman and Michael Martin
right.
Murphy. I mean,
that's right. Well, we had fun talking with David when he was on the show several months ago while he was doing his tour, and I got to remind him of the first time I ever met him was at one of his clinics that he was doing in Tennessee, and then I had to ask the important question in my mind regarding David and how does he manage that massive mustache that he carries. Yeah, we had a lot of fun talking with David. But I want to take just a minute and kind of plug this trail ride. The National Trail Ride to benefit the Fiona Rose Murphy Foundation is going to take place June 5th through the 7th, and it's in 5 states and in Germany. So this trail ride will be held on the same weekend as National Trails Day. There will be clinics. There will be beautiful trails to ride in, great facilities. There will be a lot of music in the evenings. There will be meet and greets with the stars at each of the locations. We have fantastic entertainers that have donated their time to perform concerts for the folks that are coming for the trail ride. And so we'll be very excited about doing this. I think this is the first time that a fundraiser has been done on the same day across the country where it's a trail ride. And so people can go to twhbea.com to find out more information, twhbea.com, or they can go to equestrianlegacy.net, and that's our website where we have the details about the ride. The locations are listed there, contact information. It's going to be a lot of fun. We have folks like Michael Martin Murphy that will be performing in Tennessee. We have R.W. Hampton and Ken Lee in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Joni Harms in Washington at Butler Hill Equestrian Center. Michael Jonathan in Illinois. And we're kind of waiting to see. I believe that Wade Kimes, Royal Wade Kimes, may be performing for us in Missouri at the location there. So a lot of great artists that are donating their time for this, a lot of clinicians that are giving their time as well to help raise money to help children that have osteogenesis imperfecta or brittle bone disease. And all of the money that's raised goes to the Fiona Rose Murphy Foundation to help support the children and families that are going through emotional and financial stress in dealing with this disease. So appreciate your contribution in helping make people aware of this, Dutch, and we appreciate Trailblazer Magazine, Bobby Joe, and Susanna Gibson for helping support this as well. So really, really appreciate that, and we encourage people to pick up Trailblazer Magazine in March and read Dutch's articles on Michael Martin Murphy and on David Litchman. So it should be a terrific issue that's coming out in March.
If I do say so.
If you do say so yourself, that's right.
And the story about Michael Martin Murphy and Trailblazer is not like the blog was about writing it and the silliness of the occurrences of, first of all, having a 2.5-day window to interview, write, proof, and edit and polish a story instead of a month.
Right.
But the story in Trailblazer is really the story about Michael.
Right. And I think people are certainly going to enjoy reading that article as well as the one on David Litchman, too. So, hey, we've had a great time talking with you today. Appreciate Martha calling in and visiting with us. I know we had some other callers that had called earlier, and we just didn't get to them. But we'll have to do a follow-up show, Dutch. You're a lot of fun to talk to. We love following your blog and your post on Facebook.
Thank you.
And we're going to encourage people again to pick up the book, We'll Have the Summer, by Dutch Henry.
Yes, please do.
Yeah. and like Dutch on Facebook as well. He likes to have a lot of folks like him there. So, Dutch, next week we have a really tremendous show that we'll be bringing to folks. We'll have folks from Backcountry Horsemen of America that will be joining us next week. They are a regular feature on Equestrian Legacy Radio the first Thursday of each month. And then we have a terrific entertainer, Templeton Thompson, that's going to be joining. And Templeton is actually going to be performing at Circle E Guest Ranch in Tennessee during the Fiona Rose Murphy Foundation Trail Ride. So Michael will be in concert on Saturday night. Templeton will be performing on Friday night, and I think doing a couple of songs before Michael starts his show on Saturday. So we're really looking forward to having Templeton Thompson with us next week. So it's going to be another great show on Equestrian Legacy Radio, and we encourage people to join us for that. Something new that we're going to be starting in the middle of March, and that will be Equestrian Legacy Radio Late Night. And we know that a lot of our listeners that tune in for the live show, you know, that's kind of work hours. And we have a lot of folks that go back and listen to our archive podcast of the shows. but we're going to be doing Equestrian Legacy Radio late night on Tuesdays, and that will give people an opportunity to be at home to be able to listen to the show and an opportunity to call in maybe a little more conveniently for them than during the noon hour. So stay tuned for more information on Equestrian Legacy Radio late night coming in March. And so, Dutch, once again, I appreciate so much you taking the time to join
Thank
us
you.
Again. It's just been a joy to talk with you. Thanks to all of our listeners today on Equestrian Legacy Radio. And we remind you that if you climb in the saddle, get ready for the ride. Thanks for listening.
I'm leaving to go back home where the short grass grows. I'm going where the short grass grows. The blue mountains rise and the wind always blows. A place big enough for a man to dream. Back home where the short grass grows. A prettier sky, almost as blue as the blue of her eyes. When we shared our love by the pinon fire's glow, back home where the short grass grows. I'm going where the short grass grows. Blue mountains rise and the wind always blows. A place big enough for a man to dream, back home where the short grass grows, where the ponies run wild like the wind in her hair. When I close my eyes I can almost be there. I can see my love awaiting where that old sweet water flows. Back home where the short grass grows. I'm going where the short grass grows. Blue mountains rise and the wind always blows. A place big enough for a man to dream. Back home where the short grass grows.
Short grass is a waving to a turquoise sky above. The aspen-covered hills guard the country that I love. I'm going where the short grass grows.